Your timing is impeccable. We've been doing a couple of solo episodes, and I have appreciated every one of your contributions, but I have to ask, are you, like, actively trying to keep us a secret in those episodes? Are you teasing somebody? Are you laying next to somebody? Are you in the tub?
No, I'm just in a very dark room because I'm too lazy to change out the lights.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
For lack of a better word, you kind of sound like a slut on those episodes. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it sounds great. We've been getting rave reviews from my wife.
Oh, yeah. That's sounding nice and sultry.
Yeah. Calming. Yeah. Okay. You're giving it your all.
Yeah, I hope all of you are falling asleep to me, but in a good way.
Today, we are finally back together again, and while we are slightly deviating from our Countdown to Endgame series with the Don't Get Them Started podcast, we had the opportunity, each of us, to have seen three different films. I'm assuming you've actually seen Aquaman.
Yes, and I have my feelings on that. Actually, okay. Pretty good feelings, actually.
Yeah. Oh, mine are solid. Mm-hmm. We saw Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. That is confirmed that both of us have seen that film. And then Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Mm-hmm. That's a big assumption that am optimistic on.
Spoiler alert, it's the best out of the three.
Yeah, and that is, thank you for mentioning that, and it's a good segue. This is a very spoiler alert heavy episode of the podcast. Mm-hmm. So if you listen to any other podcasts about Captain Marvel or any of the movies that are coming out right now, I mean, if you're on Instagram, everything is spoiling everything for everybody. So mm-hmm. We're not doing anything different. So what I thought we would do is start with the big one, start talking about Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm down with that. I'd say we get the next spoiler alert, the weakest one out first.
Okay. I shared a little bit about my experience on the mini episode that I dropped, just kind of informing people that we'd be connecting today. But the first time I saw it, and I'll just tell you the story here so you can get a little background on how I feel about it.
Okay.
The first time I saw Captain Marvel, it was a day that I worked. I had bought tickets in advance. It was opening night. It was the first showing. I got the VIP section,
I
live.
I miss that so much.
Oh, it's nice, and we could talk about it later, but the other seats in the theater in the Dolby Atmos ones are actually almost as nice as the VIP, but I digress. That's the second time I saw it. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert on that. But so I went into that first showing, and I was so excited, and my wife hadn't met me yet. I had my Captain Marvel shirt on. I went to the bar to have a few drinks, and I don't drink often, and I think after like two or three IPAs, mm-hmm. after getting up from the seat when my wife got there, I realized I was officially drunk. So I walk into the theater, I sit down, I order food. The waiter, not really with a lot of effort, coaxes me into another beer.
Oh, wow.
So by the time the movie started, I was pretty lit, as the children say.
Mm-hmm.
And When speaking with other people at my place of work and discussing the movie, I didn't remember anything. And when I left the theater, I was actually pissed off at the movie and thought it was bad. I didn't think it was good. I thought a lot mm-hmm. of stuff was just shoved in there. And it was an opportunity for Marvel to say, like, hey, here's a prequel to a bunch of our films. And we're giving you this prequel because we think that this weapon can beat Thanos, mm-hmm. who we've already introduced. So yeah. I was really upset, and that's kind of how Aquaman came into my life, because I wanted to watch something else to kind of get rid of those feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like, I got to give it a second chance. There's another podcast I listen to that does something very similar. I mean, the idea to count down I got from them. Their name of it is Countdown to Infinity by Delphin Pod. Please check it out if you haven't. But I needed to see it again.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many great things about it. So I went and saw it dead sober, and it was an awesome film. But there, I still have some things about it. So, mm-hmm. so what about you? What was your experience?
Yeah, I think it's a similar movie as Marvel did in Phase 1. is what I'm thinking. So like there, it was like a similar like phase one origin story, but to me, essentially my summation of Carol Danvers as a character was Arnold Schwarzenegger from Terminator 2 had more emotion, I think, than that.
Oh yeah.
But to me, it's also kind of fitting because she was raised as a soldier the whole time, accomplished pilot, right, in the human side, a Kree warrior, on that planet. So, she's just very, not fun, I would say. For example, yeah. Aquaman's a very fun character. She's the antithesis of him, where she's just very straight and narrow. Most of the humor came from Nick Fury, in the film, which the de-aging CGI that they did to him, probably the best I've ever seen.
Yeah, and the humor, a lot of the other humor, not only from Nick Fury, came from just references of 90s pop culture.
Yep. Yeah.
So the Stan Lee cameo, he's reading the script for Mallrats, which took me the second time to notice that, because I saw an Instagram post from Kevin Smith saying, "I'm so honored, to be mentioned in this film and to have it a cameo." And I was like, "What the fuck is he talking about?" Because I didn't remember. Yeah. And then the second one, I was like, "Got it."
Yeah, and it was nice and meta because it's essentially Stan Lee cameoing about a cameo that he's about to cameo.
About him as a comic book writer who invented these characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is
it's about the most meta cameo we've had in the MCU, easily. Because it's him as himself this time, not as talking either to a bunch of aliens or mistaken identity. It is Stan Lee there on that train.
Right.
Reading that script. So I thought that was really cool.
And you, overall, I mean, do you like Captain Marvel as a as a comic book character, as a hero?
Yeah, I liked the movie in terms of spectacle and overall, but I just don't think it adds much to the MCU, right, at all. I think all that stuff was shoehorned right at the end, in a sense,
right,
because not a lot of stuff is intertwined or put in, right? Also, some of the well, I wouldn't say references, but she's being set up as Superman, is what I'm thinking of, this universe, because her power level at the end of the film is so far ahead of everybody else, because we find out that she is essentially, her power is directly drawn from the Tesseract, right, from the Space Stone. And so if you directly have your power from an Infinity Gem, yeah, you're going to be pretty cray cray, in a sense, but I think they're setting her up to be this Superman-like character where she is just so much more powerful than any of the other heroes. Because right at the end when she was fighting Kree, right after we figured out that the Skrull are actually not the bad guys, in the film, spoiler alert, everybody, but the Skrull are the bad people in the comics. They're the ones who actually...
they're very bad people, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're the ones who start the Secret Wars in the comic books. And Secret Wars causes a lot of heroes to die over the course of that stretch. And the Skrull were all part of that because they'd shapeshift, right? And so for here, we figure out that they're just trying to find a home. They're just refugees.
Yeah, sorry. In a lot of her comics that I read prior to going into the movie to prepare for it, she is one who saves worlds and saves people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of her mission. And so that I did like that, I guess in just a current reference for me personally, in knowing that little bit, I was like, oh, this is relatable to the comic Carol Danvers. But I mean, a lot of current comic books that are being written are written around how Marvel has been shaping their universe. So, I mean, I guess it's all
relative.
One and the same. Kind
of,
yeah.
Yeah. But there wasn't a lot of character development for some of the people, her best friend, right, from the pilot. I'm trying to remember her name. Her last name is Rambo from what I remember. And the meeting that
it's Maria.
Yeah.
Maria Rambo and her daughter's Monica, which I think Monica Rambo ends up becoming another Captain Marvel later on.
Yep.
Lieutenant Trouble.
Yeah. And the reunion that they have, Marvel tries to set up as this proud, surprising moment, or this big moment, this emotional moment. But we've never seen that character. We didn't have enough flashbacks to build her up to know, okay, why are they such good friends? What did they go through throughout this whole time? Like, to me, if you're going to like set up an origin, like give me some origin instead of just a couple of flashbacks about characters. So I thought that part was weak. Like the actual action and the setup of the Kree and Skrull War thought was great, especially turning it on its head. I mean, hell, we got to see Ronan the Accuser before his crazy fest in Guardians.
But that wasn't Lee Pace, right?
Yeah, it was.
It was Lee Pace? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Why did he sound so different? I thought I looked that up on IMDb. He sounded so different.
Well,
from...
also remember, this is like pre him going crazy.
Oh, okay.
Like before he gets the power gem and everything and goes like schizo with power because of that. So this is him before that, which I thought was cool because we get to see him as like a semi-normal person before his like journey into madness in Guardians. And
right.
So you still get that MCU connection there, and then we get the beeper, you know, because she's going essentially halfway across the universe to find the Kree a new home. So that's why we can say, why didn't she know? How come she didn't know about Thanos trying to destroy everything?
Or why did Nick Fury wait till the end to page her, which is all the question. And there are several loose ends in this. And the whole period piece on it, I feel... was an attempt to kind of get away from the timeline and say, like, we can create our own timeline here and have events that have taken place that don't necessarily need to be referenced. And I did enjoy the movie overall, as I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. I still don't like, and I think I may have texted you this, and I put it on Instagram at Don't Get Him Started Pod, that I thought Brie Larson was not the best choice for what was intended to be such a powerful character. And like you said, build up to be Superman. But in essence, it's a... she was saved by the Kree.
Mm-hmm.
She was injected or infected with the Tesseract powers and Kree blood. And so she's almost like this... she's a super soldier like Captain America, but who has been imbibed with this universal power.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I think about that and you think about those scenes with her in her full suit and she like crushes through the Accuser destroyer or whatever.
Yeah, like just like bye-bye. Like there wasn't a lot when she got to full power that really posed much of a threat.
Nothing.
To her. And so I'm trying to figure out, oh, okay, like is Thanos going to pose a threat to her?
She could just go right through him.
Yeah.
But I guess the idea is that she has more powers that we don't know about that can prevent... Well, I don't know. As theories go, I feel like the snap just continues.
Yeah.
And they have to deal with what they've been dealt. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
I would like to see, like, Endgame start out with, like, her experiencing the snap on the other side of the universe. Is what I would like to, like to see, like, all the, like, half of the Skrull people just disappear. You know, and then she goes...
She's, like, rehoming him? Mm-hmm. Okay.
And be like, oh, like, okay, what the hell just happened? And then the beeper goes off. So that she can say, oh, okay, like, maybe this is a result of that. Because you get that mid-credit scene, which is like, where's Fury? You know?
Yeah, which is again, with Brie Larson, and maybe it's because we know Chris Evans and Scarlett Johansson so much. Mm-hmm. And I think Falcon was in that too, right?
Yeah.
And... she pops up and you're like, you don't belong here, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And like, if I could have seen someone like, I always go back to Emily Blunt. I love thinking about Emily Blunt and those, because she was supposed to be Black Widow, and she was in that Edge of Tomorrow. Yep. She's in a lot of things that I believe her as a badass in.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, I don't know, I'm just a guy who lives in Idaho. You know, you're just a guy who lives in Virginia, but we've got our opinions.
Yeah.
I don't think that she was the right choice. I just felt like she was weak and her lines were delivered really subpar for what is supposed to be such an epic moment in film.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's very robotic. And I don't know if that was like what the director wanted, because she's an Oscar winning actress. It's not like she's bad. You know,
I know she won the Oscar.
Yeah, she did. Yes. And so it's not like she doesn't know how to act, but I don't know if it was maybe bad screenwriting, bad direction, or
maybe
like a combination of all three, where she wanted to take a character a certain way and you go, okay, like the Terminator has more range than you right now, and that's not a good thing. Like a robot should not be more human. Like
an Austrian robot.
Her, yes. And so I was, yeah, that one just kind of rubbed me the wrong way, especially since most of the other characters were so good. Like Coulson mm-hmm. being Coulson, like as always, like Nick Fury being great, you know, and you can tell like Sam Jackson like has to love playing that character because he's always good in that role. And like, yeah. Hell, even Jude Law, I didn't think did too bad. You had the guy who played Talos. Also did really
Ben
well.
Ben Mendelsohn?
Yeah, I thought he did really well because he had two accents in the film. Because he had his normal, like, Australian accent when he was Talos, and then he had an American accent when he was shapeshifting mm-hmm. as well. So, it was good. I liked it, that, but, like, she just needed more. Like, yeah, I'd have taken Emily Blunt, probably, over that.
Yeah, And Annette Bening was the Supreme Intelligence, mm-hmm. and she was also, you know, Mar-Vell, yep. which is a character that Stan Lee created. So I think she's great in everything she does. I definitely, there was that trippy moment where Brie Larson her mind is being infected by the Skrulls, and she,
yeah, they're doing that memory probe or something like that.
And Mar-Vell keeps coming and going mm-hmm. From each side, and it's just like that was such a mind fuck, but it was such a good scene. I will see that movie again, and I can't wait to see Endgame, of course. Mm-hmm. But now that I've seen this in the pantheon of all the other films, now when we watch them, you know, we're probably going to try to fit those things, fit her into these timelines. Even though most of them are current day 2000s, mm-hmm. but she's not too far off. She's in the 95, right? 96.
Yep.
And so with that timeline and with some of the things they introduced, I have some problems with some things, mm-hmm. not to mention all the, you know, all the other stuff that I referenced, mm-hmm. but Nick Fury introduces S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yep.
But in Iron Man 1, Coulson is just figuring out the acronym.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't so he have just, it yet. Yeah.
Yeah, but Nick Fury introduces it as S.H.I.E.L.D., which mm-hmm. I thought was a very blatant, they forgot that they talked about that in Iron Man 1 for mm-hmm. some reason.
Yep. Yeah, or they're just going, you know what, we're just going to retcon this because we want to.
I guess thing so.
Could be going on. It's one of the only things I can think about. Because Marvel is usually so calculated in what they put into their films and what they don't to make sure that doesn't happen.
Right. I know. That's why I was so confused.
Mm-hmm, that it makes me go, okay, I think you guys probably just decided, you know what? Fuck it. Let's just put it in there. Let's say S.H.I.E.L.D. existed at this time instead.
They had the ability to.
Yep. Yep. And then you'll watch Iron Man 1 and then they won't even have S.H.I.E.L.D. yet. And then you go, what? Who?
Yeah.
Like, what the hell's going on? But like in terms of like a movie, like, I think it's a like 6-7 out of 10, like average Marvel film. Like it's not bad, you know, but it's okay. You know, I'm not mad about it in any other way.
The other part was the cat, so the Flurkin.
Yeah, the alien with a pocket dimension.
Yeah, so his name was Goose in this movie, mm-hmm. but in the comics his name is Chewie,
yep.
which is a reference to Star Wars.
And Disney owns the property. It's not like they couldn't use the name.
I know, and in the comics, he was like a big part of her life. So maybe mm-hmm. that's, you know, because this is an origin story, it's introduced this way. But the cat, or the Flurkin, Goose, was so close to Nick Fury, and he was introduced to him. It was like he was his cat. And what I read was, they were both not cat people. She's like super allergic to cats, yep. so it was really hard working. Well, mm-hmm. I mean, there were four cats on set, but the majority of the scenes were CGI.
Yep,
with that cat.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also if you remember one of Nick's lines, I'm trying to remember the movie, but when he told someone the last time I trusted someone, I lost an eye.
Yeah,
we now know it's the cat was the last person Nick Fury had trusted.
Which most people are, like, really irritated by that mm-hmm. they're supposed to be an epic story. But I think that goes along with the humor they've been introducing and, mm-hmm. you know, since Ragnarok on how gratuitous their humor is. I mm-hmm. think that's just another effort to do that
still. Yeah, I wasn't mad about it. at all. I thought it was pretty neat, actually.
So how many thumbs up do you give that movie?
I would give it like one and like a side thumbs up. It isn't like two thumbs up, like, oh hey, I'm gonna watch this movie whenever I can. It's, oh, I will watch it if it's on TV type deal, but I wouldn't go out of my way to see it.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did go out of my way to see it twice, mm-hmm. but that was because I don't think I gave it a fair shot the first time. Mm-hmm. And so seeing it without drinking was definitely necessary. So I give it the same. I give it one thumb up and a side thumb. Mm-hmm. So which leads us to, and what I think you kind of earlier were, you know, suggesting, is that you did enjoy Aquaman.
That was
a movie that after I saw this, the Captain Marvel, the first time, like I wanted to see something solid and something different. And from the get, I loved this movie.
Does not let the fuck up.
No, it doesn't.
At all. It's like 2.5 hours of go, 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 mm-hmm. go. And I went, all right.
Yeah, and talk about casting. The casting for Aquaman should have been a blue-eyed, blonde-haired, you know, 6'5" man. Mm-hmm. And instead, it's like a 6'5" Hawaiian, long-haired, bearded, dark-skinned man, which watching Jason Momoa portray this character was all sorts of worth it. I joke around with my wife with this scene all the time, but the scene when he first drops into the submarine and he says, "Permission to come aboard."
Yeah.
Like, and he flips his hair back, mm-hmm. It's so corny. It's so cheesy, but it works. Mm-hmm. And we got introduced to him in Justice League, right? That was the first time that he was Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think that that was fantastic casting in comparison to Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm.
And this movie wasn't accidentally cheesy. Like, you could tell this was purposeful cheese that we were being served, and it's about damn time, because we've had so many serious comic book movies over and over and over again. To get one that didn't take itself too seriously was why I think I enjoyed it so much. It wasn't trying hard to be something it was not. Like, Aquaman's the underdog. How do you get him to not be the underdog? You make a stupid movie, is what you do. But you make it a self-aware stupid movie, not a like, oh, okay, we're going to try to be this super serious, like, Dark Knight level film with Aquaman. No, the guy talks to fish. You can't have a like Batman level of like dark storyline with a guy who talks to fish.
I
was just saying, you have to make it corny, and they did, which was a great choice.
Well, and that's an obstacle they had to face, was like, how do we want to bring this character to the big screen, you know, when he really where his power exists is in the water.
Mm-hmm.
But they did touch on that in Justice League, but in this one it was more of that. It was like going into the desert, and it was at the aquarium when he's a kid and he talks to fish and he basically ensures that people won't bully him.
Mm-hmm.
While he does need to be around that stuff, it did showcase like that he is more than just this water going superhero.
Yeah.
And it showed that the Atlanteans and like all the realms that were underwater, which is dope, because I mean, some of the most unexplored areas of our planet is the ocean, mm-hmm. or are the oceans. Oh,
yeah.
And so you
could get so creative with your designs, because nobody knows what's down there. Like, it looked great. Like, the action scenes were beautiful, like all of the creatures and everything, when the massive battles were going on between like the seven kingdoms that were down there. To me, they got all that right. It was really nicely done. I think, like, hell, it's a better Thor film than Thor is. I mean, pre-Ragnarok. But it's almost like the same type of story. You have this guy who is supposed to be king, but doesn't want to be king, you know, and like wants to do his own thing. Like, it's a similar setup where he has other people guide him to the kingship eventually. But he's reluctant.
But he doesn't want to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Patrick Wilson, who plays his half brother, I think that's his name, Patrick Wilson. He at first, when I saw his face, I was like, okay, I don't know if I buy this, but he did fucking awesome too.
Mm-hmm.
And then Willem Dafoe, Amber Heard, Nicole Kidman, like so many powerful performances from people that delivered on all angles. And, yeah. you know, I've talked to, like, there's a Roy Orbison song mm-hmm. when they're in Italy and she eats the rose. That whole scene was a montage of like, oh, I might be falling for this person mm-hmm. kind of cheese, yeah. which that was one of the only parts where I was very much taken out of the movie. Like, okay.
Where you groaned instead of.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a couple of those for me. Now, the best cheese, though, was that octopus playing drums.
I've seen the movie twice now, and I forget about that scene every time. And I'm like, hey, just pan up a little bit. Save some money on the CGI. You don't need to add it. Mm-hmm. It's unnecessary. Have a guy playing the drums. Or a guy, like an Ursula guy, mm-hmm. with half octopus. Like, then I'm in.
Yeah.
But the octopus thing is so Little Mermaid. It was
so
crazy.
Well, so it is a comic book reference because that octopus was one of Aquaman's sidekicks back in the 50s and 60s. And the director in an interview, like this was after Mad Max Fury Road came out, he said, if a guy can be playing a flaming guitar, I can have an octopus playing drums.
Okay.
And so
he hit it.
Yep. And so that's when it got put. Or decided to get put into the film when it was being made was, oh, okay, well, if Mad Max can do it, we're going to do it. And I saw it and went, okay, I like this. Like, this is what this movie's about. And then I went, and they got the reference right. There was actually mm-hmm. a lot of little small references in the film, kind of like that, that I was really surprised about, actually. Oh, hell, I mean, even, like, the dad for Jason Momoa, for Aquaman's character, like, Jason Momoa specifically asked for that person to play his dad.
Yep.
Because it's one of his, like, acting idols, from what I read.
And so, well, and he's from, I think he's a Kiwi, he's from New Zealand, mm-hmm. I believe, but it's a lot of that same, like, Islander camaraderie and brotherhood, which he is very much into. Mm-hmm. Jason Momoa overall is, I think, one of the coolest people that I don't know.
Yeah.
Like his red carpet, you know, what he wears on the red carpet. He just wears like a vest and like a V-neck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and he just plays around all the time. He's my age, which maybe that's why I relate to him too. He is mm-hmm. He's married to a 52-year-old and has a daughter that's almost his same age. But I think he's just rad. So there's a part of that too. I will fully admit, after this movie, if nobody mm-hmm. can tell already, I fell in love with him.
Yeah.
So I am now, you know, and maybe you'll be proud of me. I don't know.
Ooh.
I'm trying to get like fit, you know, like Brody, like just kind of like solid. And so I'm going to the gym a little bit more, and I've made a Momoa Muscles playlist. If you feel me. So I'm trying to get,
all right.
Yeah. And so, and anybody that follows me on Apple Music at RSU3, can have access to all of these. I've also made playlists to, the Countdown to Endgame, which have, different genres for 80s electronic and hip hop. And they're all sad songs that have to do with people turning to dust, which is unfortunate.
Ooh.
But this one, Momoa Muscles, will be added on there shortly. So, this movie was so, it just inspired me to want to be like in shape like that. Cause it's, you know, it's like that superhero fit shit that you mm-hmm. and I have talked about. And I know I won't fully get there, but I don't know. There was so much this movie did to me mentally and got me to this place of like, I love the score,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily the music that they chose, but the score of like when the Black Manta, I'll play that as we're talking here, just so people get a reference, but all of it. I thought it was well done. Mm-hmm. And even the cheesy parts didn't necessarily make me go full cheese and want to pull out. So, mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. And the same thing for me. I just, it's a very watchable film, because most films you can kind of tune out. I couldn't tune out this movie because it was just so balls to the wall, but it was like oxymoronic. So the film is long. Like it's almost a 2.5 hour runtime, but there's not a lot of development in the film because there's so many things happening, right? You have Momoa going on his journey, or Aquaman going on his journey. You have like Orm trying to unite the Seven Kingdoms, and so you don't get a lot of time in like the different kingdoms because you need four out of the seven to agree before you can invade. And then he's looking for his trident, right? But and that was also a plot hole, if you remember from Justice League.
Why? Because he had it?
Uh-huh. He has his trident in Justice League, but in this movie...
And he's got his uniform.
Mm-hmm, but in this movie, his love interest already mentions the Steppenwolf attack from Justice League.
Oh, yeah.
And so there is a timeline problem there, because then I go, oh, okay, so what was that trident that he had, and what was that armor that he had? And so that was the only thing I found when I watched the movie, is I went, nah, I think you guys messed up a little bit.
I would say that the one story that they didn't pick up on for sure was Black Manta.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, his character, those were quick shots. He lost his dad. Aquaman didn't help him.
Yep.
He was building a suit because he wanted to get back at Aquaman, and he was partnering with... Aquaman's brother,
mm-hmm.
to get, you know, the Atlantean armor, and then he built it, and then he fought him, and Aquaman beat the shit out of him in Italy.
Yep. Yeah.
And then he just like disappears. I mean, he crushed his head,
mm-hmm.
so he should be dead, but he didn't really, like, that was it.
Yep. And we figure out in a after credits scene that he is not exactly dead, and so that should set him up as, like, the main villain for an Aquaman sequel. At least I hope. Because I want to see more Black Manta myself. Because I liked it a lot.
There was an after-credit scene?
Oh, yeah.
What?
Or after-credits or end scene, but it's the scene...
Oh, shit.
But it's the scene where, like, this doctor who's obsessed with Atlanteans saves Black Manta. And in exchange for saving him, he's going to lead this doctor to Atlantis.
Dude, I did not know that there was a... Ooh, I just boy. Assumed that was only Marvel, so I got to go back and watch it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it sets up him to be the villain for, like, subsequent films. And this was also the first DC Extended Universe film to gross $1 billion, was Aquaman.
So I gotta go back and watch that end credit scene, because mm-hmm. I had no idea.
You do. And then, yeah, everybody thought, like, Wonder Woman was the most successful DC film, but now this is...
Yeah, this one is, and he's like skyrocketing into stardom. And he was in Game of Thrones, which I never watched. So,
ooh, unfortunate for you.
He was well known for that mm-hmm. before this, but for this, he's well known to me.
Ah, well, okay, yeah. Well,
isn't that all that matters?
It is. Yeah, as long as he's your Aquaman,
then so that's I give what it, matters. I give it two thumbs up.
Yep. So on that one. Yeah. So do I. If Aquaman and Captain Marvel were both on and I had to pick a channel, I'd pick Aquaman.
Yeah, I would too.
It's just more of a fun film to watch.
So that leads us into our final movie, the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. This one won an Oscar for Best Animated Film.
Mm-hmm.
This one was one that I think the seal of approval at the beginning was the comic book... guild yeah. or something mm-hmm. Approved this film.
Yeah.
This movie was one that was highly acclaimed by anybody you talked to. Mm-hmm. Anybody you talked to said, you got to see it. It's the best at like any, everyone, no one I have ever talked to has said it wasn't that good. Or, you know, it was okay. Mm-hmm. Everybody has said it was amazing. I sat down and watched Spider-Man it and it was awesome. Movie.
God, it was so good.
I know.
The idea of having, like, almost every Spider-Man from every universe getting together and Spider-Manning it up was awesome.
It was rad.
Yeah, like, Miles Morales, like, being the main Spider-Man in this film, like, and he is Spider-Man in certain universes, so that worked out incredibly well. I thought, like, the animation, I thought, is what really sold me, because it's not, like, Disney Pixar animation. Type deal. It's at a much lower frame rate. It's not at like 24 frames a second, so it looks more comic booky because it's not like that steady motion that you get, but it's not quite stop motion animation. It's like right in the middle. And
it was so solid.
And that's to be why it was so unique and why I liked it so much, because I'd never seen something like that before. And then you get like Fisk being like the main villain who has a particle accelerator that's causing all these Spider-Men to come from different universes, and you have old washed up Peter Parker, you had like experienced Spider-Man Peter Parker, you had Spider-Ham, so you know, Peter Porker, which was wonderful. You had Noir Spider-Man, which was played by Nicolas Cage, actually. So that was cool. And then you had, like, what was it? Jenny Parker, right? Who was, like, part of Peter Parker's DNA. You just had every damn Spider-Man that you could think of all teaming up and having fun. Or as Miles, or as you saw in the film, Miles, like, struggling to even realize, like, oh, okay, here's all these Spider-Men. How the hell am I going to even amount to them or match up to them? So it had everything. It had like the good action, it had the good character development, it had the great story, it had the great animation. I can't fault the film like in any way.
It had a good villain build up too, and like it, with Kingpin, for me not knowing anything about Kingpin and not knowing a lot about Spider-Man in general, I was introduced to a lot of what we already know of Spider-Man is that he's constantly battling, well, like every superhero, with being a superhero versus living his life. And he deals with the pain of loss, and he knows his, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. And then you see, you know, I know all those things, like that base level. And what this one introduced is a different level of responsibility and a different level of family connectivity and disconnect. And then a villain who is extremely intense, who crushed the original Spider-Man that was in Miles's universe, who was played by Chris Pine, who I had no idea was in this, and I love him as a voice actor. He's in one of my wife and I's favorite movies. Is it Rise of the Guardians? That's about the holidays, and he plays Jack Frost. Anyway, it's I just like Chris Pine in general, but you know, Kingpin literally crushes him with his hands.
Yep, and that was ballsy. I thought
that was. Oh, you mean for a storyline?
Oh, yeah, just to be like, let's kill Peter Parker, like right off the bat. Let's do it. And I went, all right. So where's my Peter Parker? And then we get to see washed up Peter Parker. Like afterwards, I'm like, oh, okay. Like I'm still happy because I still get my Peter fix.
Was Doc Ock? Was that like a version of him, or is that his daughter? Tell me more.
Because the timelines are so screwed up in this movie. I think it's a version from what I remember because I don't think it's like Doc Ock, but it's different. I mean, kind of like what you also had Green Goblin and, who was it? It starts with like a P, another villain that happens to be like Miles' uncle.
Oh, the Prowler.
Oh yeah, the Prowler. Yeah, that was like Miles' uncle, you know? And, like, I thought that was great because, like, once his uncle finds out, like, that this Spider-Man was Miles, he couldn't kill him, even though he had the upper hand, had him beat, was ready to take him out.
And then Kingpin shot him.
Yeah. Just.
Without any regard.
No. Oh,
that
no.
was so. He was vicious. Yeah. I mean, that. Out of all the movies that we just talked about, which were two, not all of the movies, he was the most vicious villain, and it was an animated movie. That was
Kingpin.
He didn't fuck around at all.
Did not give a fuck at all. He would shoot you or crush you with his bare hands. Like he didn't have that like super long monologue that gave the good guy a chance to get away. He's like, nope, I'm gonna shoot you. Like you're dead now.
But his intentions in this were to get his family back. So it's almost like he had these good intentions, but his inability to be a normal human and to live as a sociopath like dominated his every thought. So he would rather kill Peter Parker because he was thwarting his plans than to actually see this thing through. So I could go on and on about this movie, but overall, I really liked the movie, the animation, the characters introduced. I even thought that the Peter Porker thing, even though it was John Mulaney, was going to be super corny, but it was actually entertaining and didn't detract from the actual storyline, which I assumed it was.
Yeah, I can't fault anybody. Like, music I can't even fault, like, after watching the film. I just, like, God, it's the best Spider-Man film. Like, even the Marvel, like, to me, even the MCU films, They can't beat it. Unless Far From Home, like, blows me away, I think this is the best Spider-Man movie that has been released.
Nailed easily. It.
Yeah, because they just nailed it so well. At that, like, hell, it's what? It's a 97% on, like, Rotten Tomatoes. Like you, nobody hates it. No, nobody.
So, since we're going on the rating scale of two thumbs up that I started on this episode for some reason, do you give this one two thumbs up? I'm assuming.
If I had three thumbs. Like,
you do, but I don't want to get into the anatomy of your body and talk about where your third thumb is. But you do. So let's give it three thumbs up.
There we go. Three thumbs.
And we, you know, we talked about three movies. Out of the three movies today, what would you say your favorite one was? And, you know, rewatchability would be?
I'd say, well, if I had to pick one to rewatch right now, I'd probably rewatch Aquaman again because it's just because it's so much fun.
Yeah, I absolutely we're deadlocked on that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Even though Into the Spider-Verse is the best film, it's not the most fun. And because I think Aquaman would win for most fun, and Captain Marvel wins for average, and then Spider-Man wins for the best overall movie. But yeah, but I think Aquaman's a more fun film to watch for me.
Well, as we count down to infinity, as we continue our series, the next movie we get to watch is Captain America: Winter Soldier.
My favorite Marvel film.
Yeah, I knew it was. And so very excited to bring that to each other and to the people. And I don't really have any, like, plugs as far as, like, any gigs that I'm doing. But I will say I would like to plug things that I've referenced in this episode already. We have an Instagram account called Don't Get Him Started Pod, which we post the next movie we're watching and reviews, just kind of quick reviews there. There is, as I mentioned, some playlists that I've created that are reflective of the things that we've talked about and everything leading up to Endgame, and also the Momoa Muscles playlist that I mentioned on Apple Music. And you could follow me at RSU3. And I also mentioned another podcast. It's the actual studio is called Delphin Pod, and they put out a lot of different podcasts, but a lot of them center around movies and comics. And one of my favorite ones that got me introduced to them was Countdown to Infinity, an Avengers podcast, and they originally watched every movie leading up to Infinity War, and just kind of like talked about the movies and gave their reviews. And two of the individuals work in a comic book store, which is pretty dope. So go and listen to them. You can find them if you search Delphin Pod on the straight internet, or if you go to podcast, you can find them by searching Delphin Pod and or Countdown to Infinity. But it's a pretty rad podcast, so check that out too. But for now, Kyle, I appreciate you getting back together with me here and, you know, not being as sexy as you always are, because sometimes you got to tone it down. You know what I mean? You got to tone it down
a little bit, slightly.
Yeah. You don't want people constantly coming on to you with your three thumbs. But for now, I will say goodbye. And Kyle, you will say?
For Atlantis.
For Atlantis. Because we're in the end game now.
Mm-hmm, we are.
That's real.
Shit's going down.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Peace. I'm gonna go to the bathroom.